Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
First published in September of 2012, this Japanese manga series, written and illustrated by Okayato, has been collected into 17 volumes, adapted into anime and an online game. The plot follows a student who accidentally signs up for an exchange program that finds him inviting various half-human, half-beasts to live with him. And if you were playing Jeopardy, the answer to this clue would be, what is Monster Musum? Because we've got a full collection right here in the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
The way Alex is putting the time in, I feel like he's going to have to develop a nom de plume. Boom, boom. I'm in the Doom Room. I'm Justin, and I'm doomed.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 2, Episode 8, Dad Patrol. Now, unfortunately, Pete, you're going to have to get out of this podcast because you're not a dad. This is our time to shine, me and Justin. You've been asking us about being a father this entire time. Finally, you know, so you can quit the podcast. You're good to go. You got all the information you need. For all of you out there who may not have all the information you need, here's a quick bit of recap. Basically, Niles has decided to take care of Dorothy along with Willoughby. We don't know exactly what taking care of means, but it probably means death. So he gives her one last special day to go to the carnival, have a nice time. At the same time, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately. I was about to say, unfortunately, she has her period. She has her period. And unfortunately, as a result of having her period, she becomes a woman. And that means Candlemaker is going to be released. And in fact, he wreaks havoc on the entire carnival. That's where we leave off.
It's a fair, not a carnival. Stop fucking.
All right, we'll get into this in a second, I'm sure.
This is going to be a good fight. This is a good fight. This is the kind that the people really clamor for, is fair versus carnival. I look forward to hearing a definition of both of those words, by the way.
All right, we'll get into that in a second. Meanwhile, everybody else is kind of off on their own missions. Larry is assisting Jane, specifically, who has been tasked with getting Kay's old doll out of the well. Another thing I'm sure Pete's going to be very upset
about. Stuffed animal, it's not a doll.
Jesus Christ.
Alex just wiped his
brow
like he's been working in a mine.
I insulted you by not calling you a dad at the beginning of the podcast, and now you're going to disagree with semantically with every single one of my terms. But Jade gets a stuffed animal out of the well.
Harry.
And then we get a big reveal here that Miranda seems to be not so, quite so nice as we speculated about on the last podcast. Throws Jade in the well there. At the end, we find out everybody is floating at the bottom of the well, specifically Baby Doll and the other personalities that have been banished there. It's all pretty horrifying. Over at Rita, what is Rita doing?
She's the beekeeper.
She's the beekeeper.
That's right. She's palling along with Cyborg, who is trying to find out what's going on with Ronnie. Turns out Ronnie killed the head of Quorum, the organization that ruined her body and her life. So Beekeeper and the Borg go after her, ultimately leading to Rita freezing just when Cyborg needs her most. Cyborg also freaks out. That's the first time that's happened in a couple of episodes. And on a more positive storyline, Cliff bonds with his daughter, Clara, makes her finger pancakes, and ultimately gets invited to her wedding.
Finger sausages, and then the pancakes were regular.
Sure. Thank you for clarifying that as well. So lots of stuff going on in this episode in a lot of different directions. Why don't we start off where we know we need to start off? Pete, what's the difference between a fair and a carnival?
Well, they call it a fair. They never say carnival. You're saying carnival. It's a fair. That's all I'm saying.
So what's the difference?
How the fuck do I know? But they're calling it a fair and you're putting carnival on there. I don't know what the fucking difference is, but I'm just saying it's a fair.
When comparing fairs versus carnivals, it's important to remember that carnivals are typically traveling shows that evolve from ancient celebrations and religious holidays, while fairs bring people together for an annual community event.
Oh, nice. Thank you. Hey,
this is from a great source, Air Fun Games, a game place in Port Richey, Florida.
Okay,
good. That is the definitive take.
And just to mention, if they'd like to invite us down to tape a whole podcast about this, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
You guys were recently in Florida. Did you visit there?
No. Yeah, I do. It's my annual pilgrimage because they do outdoor party planning, Florida style.
Ooh, that sounds scary.
Oh, but extra COVID,
one thing that I'm very excited to talk about is we have a lot of well stuff, and we have a well expert with us. So I am very excited to get into the well punishment. Did you have to go down to the well? Because it seems like if you have a well and if you have kids, you threaten them with the well constantly.
Pete is referencing the fact that I grew up in the country on a well. We had a well at our house.
Yeah, you but got not, your water from a well, like an old-timey kind
no,
of...
No, no, no. Water came out of the well to pipes. I didn't grow up in some sort of 18th century.
Yeah, didn't you have to carry buckets down to the well and
yeah.
get your water?
That's right. And that's when I pulled the sword from the stone and became the king.
Wow.
I feel like that's not a well. I feel like you're mixing up.
The sword in the stone was a lake.
Yeah, that was a lake.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not to keep clarifying things on this podcast. But.
Yeah, here's the thing. We're in too, literally like a well, in too deep here trying to...
I'm actually surprised you want to talk about the well so much, Pete, because I was really worried you're going to be too scared to watch most of this episode because you hate wells.
Wells are scary as fuck, and it seemed like that creepy-ass dad knew that and used that as kind of punishment, which is the worst.
Wells make you feel unwell. Ironically.
One thing I was very surprised about, which they kind of hinted at in this episode, so we get this actually terrifying sequence.
I guess what you were going to say?
What?
You were surprised about the satanic hamster?
Nope, not quite there yet. Oh, okay. I'm still talking about the same storyline that we're still talking about.
Oh, okay.
I have not skipped ahead into an entirely different storyline.
He likes to talk about everything
at once. I like to bounce around.
Oh, man, you're like a stuffed animal in a well, bouncing around all over the place. I was surprised when we got down to the well. I thought that whole sequence was great, with Jane being terrified of it, flashing back to Kay being put in the well, Miranda, the eventual reveal that Miranda was actually in control the entire time and faking for her father. I thought she was going to do the classic digging through the mud and revealing the father's skeleton in the well, so I was surprised we didn't get that.
Wow.
That's all.
I thought that too, and I feel like we might still get there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought it was going to be a real horror moment. The fact that it came out, it was surprising that it was like Jane was like, "Oh, Miranda, you did the hard thing. I could have never done that."
Yeah, and that was Miranda, really surprising.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh, that's a fun twist or an interesting twist to have her sort of give in to Miranda because Miranda is maybe good, and then Miranda turns it again and pushes her in the well."
Well, as long as we're talking about things we thought were going to happen, I thought Larry Traynor was going to hold the rope, and then the light being was going to come out, and he would collapse, and then she would fall in the well and not be able to get out, and then the creepy old dad would come out of the house and see what's going on.
Well, he's dead, so hard for him to come out of the house, I'm just saying. Well,
do we know that?
I guess we don't. It's been strongly intimated that he's probably dead.
I bet we see that body.
Yeah,
to Alex. To your point.
This is a good question, Justin. When the family dies, that's when you board up the well because there's no one to take care of it and to put little kids down there? Or
no,
like
the last family member has to go into the well and board it up behind them, and then they live in the well.
Okay. Oh man.
And somebody in the family before that dies, you throw them in the well, and that makes the well water that much sweeter, right?
Exactly.
Oh,
that's where the phrase "all's well that ends well" comes from.
And that's Taylor Swift wrote that song "All Too Well" 10-minute version, which is also about that.
Yeah. 10-minute version is a very big country thing. We love long versions.
So this storyline was very good. I liked it. I'm very intrigued to know more. What do you think Miranda's goal is at this point? Because in the span of the show, she's clearly been revealed as a villain at the end of the storyline. Pete, yes, thank you for raising your hand.
Yeah, I think Miranda is, she's been clear that she's been trying to be the primary and has a very evil agenda that she's not so carefully trying to cover up. She is straight up bullying her way to the top.
I think she's eliminating the other people, the other powerful personalities that can threaten her primacy. She's getting rid of voters, like I said last time.
Yeah, well, okay, fine. Why don't you fucking flex on us? But first person I would have to go at is the nun with the chainsaw. I don't know why people are just not, you know what I mean? Like, that seems like one of the most dangerous ones.
No. You take out the weakest ones first, who people aren't going to miss as much. So you eliminate just the raw amount of bodies in the area before you take on the chainsaw nun. Like, chainsaw nun's gone.
Said like a fucking serial killer. The way you calmly, no, this is what you do. I've been dreaming about this for years.
Got to make plans sometimes. You never know what's going to go wrong.
Yeah. And Alex's personal underground, he took over years ago. All those other Alexes.
I'm not even the primary, I got to be honest.
Yeah, you're the penny farthing of your underground, absolutely. Right?
You just got to be sneaky about it. There might be something to the fact that, and maybe I'm misremembering this, but Miranda was the first personality exhibited by Kay, so there might be an amount of animosity that came with the rest of these personalities popping up, that Miranda feels like she wasn't good enough. She was, I guess, thrown in the well at some point and left to die. So there might be resentment there that's coming out. This might be her revenge in some way. And like we're talking about, a way of eliminating all the personalities. So it goes back to not even being Kay, just being Miranda full time. Potentially.
Yeah. Miranda wants to be in charge. You don't think so? Pete, what would you say your underground personality that's in the primary position is?
Oh, you don't want to know the different things that I'm fighting back.
It's 100% chainsaw nun. I'm just going to throw it out
there. But I think with Pete, there's no nun. It's just a chainsaw holding a smaller chainsaw.
Oh, that's adorable.
Chainsaw.
Why don't we move over and talk about the Niles Dorothy storyline, because that obviously has big ramifications for what's going to happen the rest of the season. Pete, we were talking about this a lot the last episode. I know you're anti-Niles. Certainly it doesn't make the best moves here, but what did you think of this overall storyline?
Time I could relate to Niles this whole episode is when, you know, he's trying to have a nice time and someone calls him on his peanut butter cup phone. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, come on. That's emergencies only. And the Satan hamster's talking to you, but you know, there's no need for that phone call. Let him enjoy his last day with his daughter.
Pete, I just a couple of things on that. Like, I feel like there was a lot of candy, almost torture in this episode. Did you feel especially like upset by all the melting lollipops and peanut butter cups used for other purposes?
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking. You know what I mean? That's not what they're there for. But, it's a horror element. So I guess we got to go through this torture of wasting perfectly good candy for this fucking bullshit. You know,
this is a little bit of a side thing, but I want to throw out there, I've seen bigger lollipops. They call it the world's biggest lollipop.
Wow.
I've seen bigger. Okay. So,
well, it was only half and melted. You have to imagine, like, yeah.
Yeah,
you have to imagine the full circle.
Yeah,
I don't have that kind of imagination.
Can't do that. Yeah. The lollipop imaginer personality in my brain, I killed that one first.
Dumb Willy Wonka.
All right, well, let's get back to the Niles and Dorothy
lollipop.
Originally I was like, well, why is this always on Niles? You know, why don't we talk to the mom about this? Like, he went out to the Yukon to talk to the mom. But then in this episode, we kind of get the reveal that the mom's colder than Niles. Like, she's like, fuck this whole thing. The candle monster is the important thing. And, it was heartbreaking. I was kind of hoping that there would be, you know, not two evil parents, maybe just Niles would be the awful one. But it seems like the mom is pushing this evil agenda as well, which was doubly heartbreaking.
I don't think she's pushing the evil agenda. I think the mom is just being like, hey, it's time. Is being a very like sort of a biological like mom, like someone who's like, hey, this is happening. Your world is changing. You need to deal with it. And as opposed to Niles, who's just like pretending to parent and doing all these like little kid things that aren't actually preparing his child for the future.
Wait, hold up. I know I'm not a parent here, and I appreciate the mom having.
Well, you're a cat dad, so let's use that as like,
yeah, thank
a
you.
Failure.
But I'm just saying that
cat,
like mom,
the correct term is cat daddy.
That's
oh
right.
My God. All right. So anyways, I think, sure, the mom has the appropriate...
Kitty King? Is it Kitty King?
Mom has the appropriate footwear, which we can all appreciate. You know, like
boots.
Yeah, you got to have really nice boots if you're going to go to the Yukon.
Oh, Peter, are you crying?
Excuse me. I'm getting choked up here.
For the Kitty King? The Kitty King's getting choked up.
But
by the way, I just want to mention for those only listening to the audio podcast, really love your hat that says feline good today.
Oh my God. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyways, I just think that like the fact that the mom is, you know, just saying like, yeah, you have to bring this candle monster into the world. This is what's supposed to happen is very cold and heartbreaking. Like,
I don't think that's what's happening. I think she's trying to prepare. Here's my take.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Just let me say this real quick. I think the candle maker is
monster.
serves a purpose as a protector before a child becomes an adult. And as they're using her getting her period as sort of the transition to her being an adult. And that means it's time for her to get rid of the candle maker. Unfortunately, because she hasn't been prepared, because Niles is a bad dad, she's not ready to dispense with her guardian, the candle maker. And so the candle maker is stepping out into the world to wreak havoc. That's my take on it. So she is saying like, hey, you have to deal with this and get rid of it before it gets out of control.
You, what the fuck did you pull that from? The mom shows up and is like, put your boots on. You've got to bring this candle monster into the world. She doesn't say like, hey, we can form some kind of plan and take out the candle monster at the end.
I got to agree with Justin. I think Justin's right here because the metaphor, which I thought was so well executed, is this is about puberty. This is about growing up. We've known that the entire season. When you go through puberty, your emotions are out of control. That's what the candle maker represents. And like Justin's saying, I think absolutely Niles has been resisting Dorothy growing up for over a century at this point. He's been regressing her. He's been holding her back. He has not done or bothered to find out about whatever training she needs in order to harness these powers she has to create creatures. Herschel, Manny, the Mirror Lady, Candlemaker as well, or at least to channel them. And this is coming out as the rage of puberty that comes immediately after getting her first period. That's exactly what it is. So, I think we'll see, because I don't explicitly remember, but I think we will see Dorothy saying, no, I need to grow up. I need to move forward. I need to become the human being I need to be. And she might need to deal with the Candlemaker in some way. But I don't think, based on the way that the mother was explaining it, I don't think it was like, finally, I would have my revenge. I'm a witch. It was, no, this is part of you. This is coming out. You can't stop growing up. That's almost literally what she was saying here.
I don't know what the fuck you guys are watching, but
Doom Patrol.
Yeah. I'm just saying that, like, I watched that and I got none of the mom trying to be like, no, it's okay. This candle monster is a part of you. And
she
just
wasn't saying
deal
that.
With
it was the way that the actress was explaining it very plainly. And she was explaining
she
it.
She was speaking like, she was not using full sentences.
It's
or
time.
Like, yeah. That saying it's time does not mean it's going to be okay and the candle monster
is not necessarily going to be okay. In fact, it's going to be very bad. The candle maker is loose in this carnival and the lollipops are melting, so that's a bad time for everybody. And obviously, Willoughby and Niles freak out at the end of the episode. They're like, great, now we're going to have to battle this candle maker. So things are going to get absolutely awful, but that is, like, you keep asking us what it's like to be a parent. At some point as a parent, you have to have the puberty conversation with kids. And if you don't have the puberty conversation with kids and you don't prepare them, they're going to freak out when this stuff happens, same as Dorothy does in the bathroom, because she doesn't know what's happening to her. All she knows is that she's bleeding from her crotch and she doesn't know why. And ultimately, the gas station attendant has to explain it to her instead of her father, who didn't prepare her in any way whatsoever. So
I agree with you on
that. The metaphor that we're playing with here.
Sure. Metaphors aside, but I'm just saying that, like, it doesn't seem like a good idea to release the candle monster.
Nobody thinks that's a good idea, except for the candle maker.
Sure.
But here, Pete, I think you'll understand it more if you sit down with your cat and have the talk.
Oh my God.
Have you done that yet?
Yeah.
Kitty King, have you done it?
I'll tell you what, like, there's some scary parts, right? When you talk about certain, like, the more physical aspects of going through cat puberty. But that first time you sit down with your cat and teach your cat to shave, it's magical.
It's going to be, it's a beautiful moment, Pete. You really should.
Well, I hope you two assholes are right, because otherwise we're in real trouble here.
The idea of Pete sitting down next to his cat, being like, "Oh boy, I don't want to talk about this any. I don't want to talk about this any more than you want to hear it, cat." But there comes a time in every pretty kitty's life when their tail turns up for another cat out there.
Is your cat male or female? Because that's really going to change.
It's going to change. It's going to change the conversation. And make sure you know that before you go in.
You can check if you want.
You can check.
Yeah.
Actually, Pete, take a second and go check right now. We'll just talk about something else.
Real now, quick. Real quick question. Is it cats or ducks who have barbed penises? I never remember.
You don't know? Alex, I think you need to do some research.
I have a lot of animals upstairs and I got a lot of talk.
I believe it's ducks. The ducks have the corkscrew.
Is there anything else with the Dorothy Niles section that before we move on that you guys want to talk about?
Oh, you don't want to talk about this anymore? I did really like the Willoughby stuff, just throwing in random, wild information about how magic works in this world. Just very fun. I know you're anti-talking on the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, but just ridiculous, unexplained details, and I appreciate the fact. I appreciate the fact that this is the short of show. They don't have to be like, we need to enchant these Reese's peanut butter cups to talk. Yeah. They just pull them out and do
it. They just do it. Like, my Almond Joy is ringing, but I'm not picking it up because I'm cool about it in the same way.
Smart.
That you guys are. I want to say the fun house that is at this fair is terrifying. That is a hellscape. Anybody who goes in there is going to see some sort of candle maker.
I do love to get back to the carnival versus fair discussion. Carnivals, like you're saying, travel around. They never have anything elaborate like that because you got to build it and take it down very quickly. But always on TV shows and movies, it's like, this is the most nightmarish thing possible. It clearly took us 5 weeks to build. But good visual, but doesn't make a lot of sense.
That's true. And I guess if it is a fair, there'd be a lot of animal judging and
like animals judging you, like sheep staring at you. Yeah.
You guys ever walk through the fair, just feel those fucking pigs looking you up and down? Like, look at this idiot, those skinny jeans. Yeah. Nice hat, asshole. Would you say pig? You talking to me, pig?
What the fuck did you say, pig?
I mean, I got a blue ribbon prize, pig.
I gotta say though, that hat you were wearing was awful.
Oh, okay. Well, you're the one that has the cat hat on right now.
Yeah, it says
feline
good,
fine.
Feline good today. I think that's what it was. I don't remember. Why don't we move on then and talk about Beekeeper and the Borg. We got another very fun sequence here.
Oh, the montages are just great. I mean, yes, please, more montage fun.
So fun. I do love this running bit. Now we've gotten Cliff's 70s sort of cop show thing. We've got a 60s Avengers-style opening with Beekeeper and the Borg. I want him to do it with everybody. I don't know if they're going to do it, but I want to see what Larry's opening is when he finally gets to team up with Cyborg. I want to see Jane. Just run through everybody. That'll be very fun.
I hope we'll get it. That's a good new runner.
Yeah.
What did you think about this team up, though? I think this is something that's been building for a while between Cyborg and Rita as we've been training her. And obviously, she flubs at the end here. But how'd you feel about the two of them together?
Well, it's tough because, you know, Cyborg doesn't take her seriously, even though she did get a write up in a paper. I mean, that was pretty sweet. She saved the day there. But this episode, she's really struggling. Like, Cyborg leaves her at the police investigation thing there. And then she's kind of like shows up to save the day at the end. And you think, yeah, but then, you know, this is a non-factor. So it was very heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic Rita thing. We've been talking about her sort of like taking on this leadership role or really stepping up, but she's just not quite prepped. She always starts by play acting the thing she's going to do and doesn't have the actual skills. And only later does she learn to be the hero that she maybe is going to be. Plus, I think she's like, I'm a hero. I'm going to stop this villain. But then it's like, well, it's Ronnie. And they just had a very intense conversation. You don't really know where Cyborg is in it. Everything is a little bit muddier than the comic book version.
Yeah. But I mean, she was hysterical in the morning with the paper, the way she like set it down. And then like he didn't notice it. So she like nudged it and was like, oh, did you see the paper today? Just really funny.
It was good stuff. What did you think about the Ronnie end of things? Because she really, takes a step into villainy is probably the wrong way of describing it, but certainly now that she has this Uma jelly and she's super strong, she's able to amp up what she's doing exponentially. And sort of, I took it as going out in a blaze of glory rather than being total villain. How did you feel about her movement here and the fact that Cyborg knew to find her at the sub shop, the one place they had gone on a date before?
It was like this, you know, it's cool that Cyborg can just walk into a place when it's closed. I guess they give him the keys or something. But like, I think it's one of those things where she's been warning him the whole time. I'm not who you think I am. I'm more complicated. I'm darker, all this kinds of stuff. And I mean, in her defense, she's dying and they went on a crazy adventure. And all she has to do is when nobody's looking, snag a little Uma jelly. Who's going to notice it's missing? You know,
that's a lot of like Winnie the Pooh style logic right there.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of snag a little Uma jelly while nobody was looking, that's what Quentin Tarantino did on the set of Pulp Fiction.
Really? That is, I don't know what you're insinuating there, but go fuck yourself.
Podcast sure two, where you've made that joke.
Oh my God.
That's a rudder.
The Uma Cal.
It's not.
Very confusing.
I wish you would
possibly gross rudder. I don't know.
To your earlier point, anyone can walk into a Subway sandwich shop. They leave it unlocked at night. If
fuck you,
you
that's Tino's, bro. That's not a fucking Subway.
I know, but I'm saying Subway sandwich shops leave their doors unlocked. So if you need a late night meatball sub, you can go grab one.
They have that sign in the window, right? If you need a late night meatball, dot, dot, dot.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about where I am now. I got a Wawa. They fucking deliver meatballs anytime you want, bro.
Wow. What a flex. Wait a second. I got a Wawa. That was so you could call up Wawa right now. And they'll bring you a meatball, like just in their hand?
No, they have little cups of meatballs, man. They're fucking delicious.
So you're
cups
off
of
the
meatballs?
Subway? Is this
like singular
Italian
meatballs or like?
Yeah. You know how you get like a cup of soup? You can get a cup of meatballs.
Is Wawa what you call your grandmother?
No.
You call up your Wawa and she brings over a cup of meatballs?
No. Wawa is short for water. He turns like he's got a meatball tap.
I believe that. Yeah. I grew up on well water. He grew up on a meatball tap.
It is interesting to see where this story is potentially going now that Ronnie has superpowers and is going right for Cyborg. I do wonder how much Rita is going to be involved with this going forward because she does freeze. She might have another turn in terms of deciding to give up the beekeeper identity.
I hope not.
But we'll see what happens. Why don't we talk about Cliff? Because as mentioned at the beginning, he has the one positive storyline of the whole episode where Clara comes. She's super pregnant. She's getting married to a woman. He thinks it's great that they're having a shotgun gay wedding. She curses as much as he does, which is very fun.
Beautiful.
And he cooks her a finger. So what do you guys think about this one?
Didn't see the finger being used in this capacity, but it was fun to see that come back. I thought this was sweet. Cliff is just cramming all his fathering into one afternoon and fun stuff. And then he gets the he sings the song The Living Years, which was fun, and then gets an invite to the wedding.
Yeah, I mean, this was a huge Cliff app. I was really worried he was going to blow it because he kept like being like, I'll show you my room, you know, instead of like talking with her. But I'm glad that they kind of like really started to open up and have a dialogue and that she shared with him like everything that's kind of going on with her and her nerves about the wedding and everything. And I thought he was being super sweet in a very Cliff kind of way. And I was really, when he found out it was a boy and lost his mind, was adorable. And then when he got the invite at the end, that's huge. I'm just so, he's like, I wouldn't miss it for the world. And I'm like, oh, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
He's not going to be there.
This entire storyline, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like when she asked, hey, is Niles around right now? I thought, oh no, that's either not Clara or she's looking for something like Ronnie. She's got some other agenda, but nope, she didn't. And then when she got into the truck at the end, I was like, that somebody's going to hit the truck. That always happens on these things. That'll be horrifying and terrible. And then that didn't happen.
What but, the fuck is going on in your mind, man, that you were like,
I've watched 20 plus episodes of the show where every time something good happens to something, somebody, something terrible immediately happens. So that's what's going on in my mind.
All right. Fair.
But it just seemed like a very nice time. But to your point, obviously he's not going to make the wedding. Obviously something terrible is going to happen there down the road. So.
But Claire's a lot like him, which I thought was a funny, like she's a human robot man.
Yeah, there you go. Any other notes from the episode that you'd like to call out?
Cliff saying, I'm kind of like a horse, don't need a bed. I thought that was fun.
Also, his offhand remark of me and the rats are kind of in a blood feud right now.
Don't get near the windows.
And we got another callback where once again, him saying, I'm stupid, I fucked up, I'm sorry, completely works with Clara. Mm-hmm. So I think we've really doubled down on that being the perfect life advice. If you're ever in trouble with somebody, just say that.
Yeah, yeah, good... works with everybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a cure all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I feel bad. I should call up Subway for lying about their open all-night policy.
What did you think about the way that Cliff made smiley face pancakes? It looked to me like the chocolate chips were on top of the pancake and the sausages were underneath, which was weird. I've never cooked like that.
Personally. It seemed like the sausage was the hair on the smiley pancake, but maybe the eyebrows got a little away from him a little bit. But, I mean, it's the thought that counts. He is a robot, and he doesn't have all the dexterity that you would like. But, I mean, it's
– Would you send that back if you got served that at a restaurant?
Well, if a robot was serving me, I wouldn't, you know.
Even if there was a finger in there? Would you eat the finger just to be polite?
Always eat the finger. It's good luck. Right.
Well, great. That's a good note too.
You got a finger in your pancakes? Lucky.
I did want to talk a little bit about LT. You know, we got a flashback that was heartbreaking, and I kind of was wondering what the light being was trying to do there, where it was like, he's like, I'm sick of these riddles. What's going on? And the light being is kind of like showing this interview where he basically lied to his kid and was like, hey, I'm going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Math solves everything. And you know, that's a lot to put on math.
Lightbeing's been noticeably absent lately, not been doing much. I'm curious if that next episode is the season finale here. I'm curious if we're going to see more of the Lightbeing.
Yeah, one of the reasons I didn't bring up Larry is other than that scene, we don't get a lot there. Forced is probably too strong a word, but given the theme was all about dads, I understand why we brought up the stuff about Larry here. But it felt a little perfunctory compared to some of the other storylines that delved more heavily into dad stuff, which was surprising. Also, a little bit of a note about the season finale. It's the season finale asterisk next episode. Because of COVID, they never got to finish the 10th episode, I think the effects in time. So next episode is technically the season finale, but actually the second to last episode of the season.
So it's a cliffhanger?
Ding! And the season 3 premiere is actually the 10th episode slash the first episode of the next season. So,
interesting.
So, yeah. So there you go. Just preparing some of you and our listeners out there, just in case things don't necessarily wrap up in
a bow
at the end of the episode. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's not something any of us would be mad about and like make a big deal out of.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate the heads up on that. real quick, though, Justin, I feel like you're not sharing enough with us about growing up with a well. Was it used as a torture device? Like, did you dare each other to like go and like crawl into it, or like did you lower your little brother in there? Like, come on, man, come on, like this is the time. Talk to us.
I know you want to. Well, I want to take you I'll be sort of, I'm the Jane and you're the I guess the LT, and we go up to my house and go see the well.
I wouldn't get anywhere near an actual well, but also like what's
what if you were really thirsty? And what about wishing, dude? What about wishes?
Yeah,
you just don't wish. What do you wish on?
I'll like tell you a weird
the pond thing? There's like ponds where you can wish, and
you can't throw a quarter into a pond.
Yes, you can.
The fish is gonna eat it.
I mean, you can, but you're not gonna get your wish.
The wish is well,
make wish, Pete.
Oh my god, that was creepy.
Make wish.
I think wells are way more scarier than anyone is letting on, and I don't appreciate, Justin, you covering up that fact.
What about Goonie?
Also
what about Goonies?
Based on the way your voice is going, Pete, I don't think you're feline good today. Other than
I feel
Pete,
like Pete
though,
might be a candle maker. He's turning into a candle maker.
Other than Pete, though, who is most doomed this episode? Pete, let's start with you. Who's most doomed this episode?
Turns out Dorothy is most doomed, and it's going to break my fucking heart to watch Niles murder his own child. But I guess that's what we're building towards. So, hey, this is a fun show.
Justin, what about you? Who's most doomed this episode?
Well, I'll leave you your standard answer, Alex, but I'm going to go with Niles. He's telltale coughing up blood. Pete's about to in a sec, and you know it's a bad sign. It's a signal that no matter what is happening, that character has something that's going to kill them.
It's all right. I just started taking my medicine. I'll be okay.
A little dew will do ya, my doctor always says. I'm actually going to swerve and say Cyborg this episode because we've been really ramping up over the course of the season with this Ronnie storyline. He's in love with her. He's finally happy for the first time. And then we've had this swerve. Whatever's going to go down with them is just going to be really, really bad for him. It may not be physically bad, but certainly it's going to be very emotionally bad. And I'm worried about him. He's a good guy. He might be headed to a very dark place going
forward. I mean, once you point a giant cannon at your so-called loved one, it's hard to come back from that.
That's very true. Yeah.
If you just like support pirates, just ask all pirates.
I love you, British fleet. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And now, before he passes away, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Stay away from wells and apparently fairs.
Thanks, Pete. Great advice.
We stan you, Kitty King.
Oh, no.